Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. State lawmakers have voted to allow juvenile lifers to seek resentencing after they serve a minimum of 20 years behind bars. The Juvenile Restoration Act passed both the House and Senate last month. How does this bill give juvenile offenders the chance to show the growth they've made while in prison? Will victims be able to have a say in the resentencing process? Later, we'll hear from a man who spent nearly four decades in prison for a violent crime he committed at age 16. First, Delegate Jazz Lewis, a Democrat who represents Central Prince George's County, was a sponsor of this legislation. He joins us to talk about how it would work. Delegate Lewis, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks for having me, Sheila. I'm happy to be here.
Who could seek relief under this bill? Who qualifies?
So, people who were sentenced to essentially life or life equivalent terms, anything longer than 20 years, people who are sentenced when they were a minor at the time will qualify. So you can just imagine 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds who, you know, did likely very terrible things, or at least I should say were convicted of doing terrible things and have served over 20 years could get a resentencing hearing through the passage of this bill.
How would people demonstrate that they have reformed?
So the judge would have to review 11 factors. But some of the things that they would have to show is them not having infractions, them educating themselves and being a active member of the population while they are incarcerated. The judge will also review other things like, you know, what is the environment in which this individual grew up in? You know, were they essentially pushed into this violent or criminal act by an adult who coerced them? And so had they changed and showed, you know, maturity over the time that they've been incarcerated? And those are all the type of things that would allow them to demonstrate that they've rehabilitated.
About how many cases would qualify?
So we have 47 people who have been sentenced to life without the possibility of parole in the state. But when you include life with the possibility of parole and effective life sentences, our judiciary recently said any sentence of longer than 40 years is effectively life. So we include all that together. It's over 400 to 500 additional cases separate from that 47 who would qualify.
So these are people who have spent 20 years behind bars. So what's the profile? They're presumably in their 40s, older?
Many of them are older. You know, a disproportionate number of them are in their 50s, even as far as 60 years old. And the overwhelming data shows that most folks age out of any criminal behavior after they pass 30 anyway. And it goes with the brain science that shows that, you know, juveniles are most culpable to do criminal acts in their teenage years into their early 20s, but primarily during their teenage years. And then you layer on top of that some of the high-risk communities many of these folks live in. That's why they commit those acts. But when they reach their upper 20s to their 30s years old, they would age out anyway. And keeping them incarcerated much longer than that is a waste. You know, I think I'm 32. Myself, and I think 20 years ago, where I was, you know, I was in middle school, but I think about what I've been able to accomplish over this time because I grew up in an environment that supported me despite some of the mistakes that I made. And, you know, I'm really glad we're able to move this bill forward to give people hope and give them a second chance.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Delegate Jazz Lewis, who sponsored the House version of the Juvenile Restoration Act. It would grant the opportunity for judicial review to those sent to prison as children after they serve at least 20 years. Both the House and Senate passed versions of the bill last month. Minority Leader Delegate Nicholas Kipke voted against this bill. Here's part of his argument during the House debate.
I have correspondence from Marylanders who this bill will impact. One of those is a man named Stephen Robinson, whose son was murdered by a juvenile in 2002. And he's not saying, please don't pass a bill like this. What he and many others have said to us is, please make it more considerate to victims and their families. Having three bites at the apple re-victimizes people's families who have had murdered loved ones. So there's certain aspects to this, and you know, that kind of appeal to me. But this bill, as it's before us, just goes too far, and I urge the body to cast a red vote.
What about the pain for victims and families? How are victims included in this process?
I mean, first, I want to say that no one has a monopoly over advocating for victims. I thought long and hard. I brought this bill because Paula Ruffa asked me to. Paula Ruffa is one of the victims of the DC sniper. He was shot 5 times by Lee Malvoy. And as he sat in my office a few years ago when we first started down this journey, he explained to me that when he realized that Lee Malvoy, who had done terrible things, right, in shooting so many people, when he had been both sexually and physically abused by his father, Muhammad, he realized that this kid didn't have a chance. And that's not to say that he should not have also served at least 20 years, which we agree. But should he die in jail? Not necessarily. So we put a couple safeguards in this bill. First, you have to serve at least 20 years to get this option. There's no diminution credits that can allow you to get this option earlier than that. 20 years is a red, bright line. The second thing is we allow for victims' participation. You know, victims can either testify in person, orally, or in writing, or not participate at all. Some victims, as in Paula Ruffa's case, want this option. Others may not, and they should be free to say as such. We allow state's attorneys to participate in the case so they can either advocate for keeping someone incarcerated or the opposite as well, you know, mainly to make sure that our elected state's attorneys are staying in line with the victims. If the victims want them to stay, then the state's attorneys can advocate in addition to the victim as well in doing so. If they feel otherwise, then they can go that way as well. And lastly, we only allowed folks 3 bites of the apple on this, unlike all the other states that have unlimited times for them to come back. And that was for the exact same reason of, look, if you've gone to a judge 3 times, and they've given you feedback on what they think you need to do to reform, and after the 3rd time you haven't, then you know, you're likely not going to be able to reform. This is over a 9-year period. So I think we have some very, very strong safeguards. The data on legislation like this passed across the country shows that it has less than a 1.1% recidivism rate. And that's because overwhelmingly folks aren't let out unless they have truly rehabilitated. You know, that 1% that has recidivated, it's been exclusively for parole violations, such as, you know, not telling their parole officer where they're going to go or showing up. Nothing has been for violent acts.
You and other supporters of this bill have said this is an issue of racial justice. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, the data shows that over 87% of those who are sentenced to life or life equivalent sentences in the state of Maryland are Black, and this is juveniles we're speaking about. This, the rate for Maryland is worse than Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama. It's worse than the nation. There's been a number of recent articles about independent groups acknowledging this fact, and it's a shame. The sentence is effectively, you know, for Black youth exclusively. And I think that's another reason why we need to take it off the books and move forward, because there's an issue of, look, if people do terrible acts, they should be held accountable. But, you know, the color of your skin should not dictate the length of sentence you get. You should be held accountable equally for your action in age-appropriate ways.
Any indication whether Governor Hogan will sign this bill?
This bill has passed with bipartisan support in every state that has been introduced. Here in Maryland, you know, I am a Democrat. My Senate sponsor is a Republican. We've sponsored this bill. The governor has not given us an indication one way or the other that he's going to veto it or support it. I think there's a good likelihood that he might let it pass without his signature. And that would be fine as well. But I just hope we can move this bipartisan issue forward the same way it has been in every other state that's been introduced.
How do you see the relationship between this bill and another criminal justice reform that recently passed that would take away the governor's power to override or ignore the recommendations of the parole board?
They're a little bit different, but I think I think we're modernizing our parole laws in the state. I think we went through a phase, particularly during the late 80s and 90s into the early 2000s, where we were in, I would call the tough on crime era. We had an exacerbation of mandatory minimum sentences that kind of took liberty away from the courts and even technically parole. I think we're getting smart on crime now. And, you know, there are very few states. I think there's only three states that have the governor involved at all. You know, if I was advising the governor, I wouldn't want to be involved in this, to be frank. I think allow folks who are trained to evaluate folks have the final say. You know, I supported that legislation, and the folks who are pushing for that also supported my bill that essentially tells us to treat juveniles differently.
If the governor continues to have final say in the parole process, if the parole board doesn't have final say, would that undercut the Juvenile Restoration Act?
The Juvenile Restoration Act creates a different process for children where you're going before a judge as opposed to parole. And is the only opportunity for relief if you are sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, really. So I don't think it will undercut it one way or the other. I just think there are two measures we're doing to modernize parole in the state, and I think there will be huge leaps forward for justice.
I appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Thanks for having me on the record.
Delegate Jazz Lewis, a Democrat from Prince George's County, chairs the House Democratic Caucus. At the On the Record page, we have links to more information about the Juvenile Restoration Act. I'm Sheila Cass. Short break here. When we're back, Calvin McNeil was released last summer after serving 39 years for a crime he committed as a teen. We hear his thoughts on juvenile justice reform. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. At 17 years old, Calvin McNeil was sentenced to life in prison for a dice game robbery and murder. He spent the next 39 years in prison. He earned his GED, participated in self-help programs, and worked his way up the ranks of the prison workforce. Last July, amidst the pandemic, a judge granted McNeil's release. Maryland lawmakers have passed two bills this session to prevent people like Calvin McNeil from languishing in prison. One would remove the governor from making the final decisions about parole. The other offers juvenile offenders with life sentences the chance for resentencing. Calvin McNeil joins me now by Zoom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You spent nearly four decades behind bars. What was your time in prison like?
When I first walked in those prison walls, I was afraid and scared because I didn't know what was going to happen or anything like that, because I have never experienced anything like that in my life. That is something that I would never want to experience again or wish on anyone.
Why so hard?
It's because of this simple fact. We complain about our parents and how they treat us. But when you go to prison, you are stripped of everything that you have ever had. your rights, your privacy, your dignity, as well as your name, because they're not going to call you by Calvin McNeil anymore. They're going to call you by a number. That's what you are recognized by, a number inside prison. And it doesn't feel right to be called by a number because you were given a name, but that name has been taken from you. And even to the point that we didn't want to listen to our parents, now we have to listen to someone tell us when we can go to eat, when we can go outside to the yard, or it's time for you to go to sleep. It's time for you to lock in. You can't watch the TV like you want to if you don't have these things. And then you have to stay on guard because you don't know what's going to happen from 1 minute to the next inside those prison walls. A fight can break out. Somebody can try to stab you. All types of things go on inside prison that you don't know. Like I said, you just have to stay on guard at all times. And you don't like feeling like that. But outside those prison walls, when you're growing up as a kid, you can do all those things. You're free to do what you want to do. But once you go inside prison, you're not free anymore.
You were approved for parole 3 different times. Each time, Maryland's governor denied your release. It didn't seem to make a difference that you hadn't had a single infraction in more than a quarter century, or that you earned numerous commendations from prison staff. What effect did these denials have on you?
I was mad. I was upset. I even cried when they happened. But I never gave up hope because of the simple fact that those two individuals that denied me, they didn't know me. They didn't know me at all because I wasn't the same person that I was almost 40 years ago when I first went in there, that when I went up then, because of the simple fact. Every time I went up for parole, I went up for parole 7 times. And every time I went up, they asked me to do something. And I'd done everything that was asked of me. Get my education, going to the self-help programs, trying to better myself as well as better my life and getting different perspective on things of how I see things now. Because when I went up for parole, I wasn't that same person. I had got a handle on my life and everything. And I wasn't a negative person. I was that positive person. And they didn't know me because they never even saw me. These governors make these decisions and they never see us. They never want to sit down and talk of us like the parole board do. The parole board sits down with you and get to feel and get to know you. So they don't know anything. They're just going by a piece of paper that's in front of you. Oh, you committed this crime. Oh, no, you should never have the opportunity. No, that's not how you should do things, because it is not about your political future. They are playing politics with our lives, because it is still a lot of young men as well as old men inside those walls that deserve another chance outside these walls. So it's not right how they do things. And I am happy that this process is getting ready to be taken out of the governor's hand, as well as the Juvenile Restoration Act is being passed, because without these things, we wouldn't have any hope. Those guys would not have any hope inside these walls. So I am happy. And every time I get a chance to speak on it, I'm going to tell them that any governor should not play a role in this process. You have hired individuals to do a job. Let those individuals do the job that you have hired them for.
Let me pick up on, you mentioned the Juvenile Restoration Act, which offers juvenile lifers who have served 20 years the chance for resentencing. If this bill had been law when you were convicted, I mean, you're 56 now, you would have automatically had your sentence reviewed after 20 years.
Yes, ma'am.
How would your life be different if you had had that opportunity?
If I had that opportunity, I would have been home when my parents passed away, when my wife passed away. I would have been there for them to help them, to show them how I had changed and help them in their way of living in life because they were getting up in age. I would just be a better person all around. It's so much that I had lost.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Calvin McNeil, who spent nearly four decades behind bars for a crime he committed as a teenager. You were released last summer when Maryland's chief judge asked prosecutors to reconsider the prison terms of men and women who were at risk for coronavirus and who posed no threat to public safety. What was it like to come home?
Well, it was a true blessing. It was a true blessing because I really, like I say, how we take things for granted, how it was a feeling of freedom, of peace, to really get your dignity back. I could walk out of a door and not have anybody tell me that, hey, you can't go out that door. You got to go lock in. I didn't have to hear a person tell me that I couldn't go into the refrigerator. I didn't have to hear a lot of people hollering up and down and tears out the door. Words can't even express those things of how much peace you get not being locked behind a wall or a fence or a door, like you caged like an animal. I'm not caged anymore. I'm free. It is a true blessing, and I have to thank Judge White and the Maryland State's Attorney's Office for giving me this opportunity. And I will never let them down in giving me this because they saw something in me, and I'm going to let them see that, yes, what you saw in me was the person that has matured and that is willing to do what you asked of him. Because if they call on me today or tomorrow to speak at any seminar, to speak to kids, I will do that because I want these young men and women out here to know that this is not a game. Prison is not a game. The life that you have right now, take and cherish that, because once you throw that away, you may never even see your parents, your kids, or anyone ever again, because tomorrow isn't promised to us. That's how much I cherish this, to be given a second chance in life.
Calvin, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Calvin McNeil was sentenced to life in prison as a teenager. He served 39 years and was released last summer. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us. Join us again tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.